Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, November 5th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Prosecutor General Johannes Tomana complies with a constitutional court ruling and issues private prosecution certificates for a ZANU-PF parliamentarian accused of raping a minor and businesswoman Jenny Mutasa for allegedly swindling Telecel.
It means we can proceed and have the trial that matter in court.
President Mugabe today joined four other African leaders for the inauguration of Tanzania's new president, John Pombe Magufuli.
And opposition MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai takes his Meet the People tour to President Mugabe's home province of Mashonaland West.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Prosecutor General Johannes Tomana has issued a private prosecution certificates for ZANU-PF parliamentarian Munyaradzi Kereke and businesswoman Jenny Mutasa in a compliance with a constitutional court ruling that slapped him with a suspended jail term for not respecting court orders. The court had given Tomana 10 days to comply or risk a 30-day jail term. Tomana had been found to be in contempt of the High Court and Supreme Court that had ruled that he issued the certificates in two cases involving Kereke, who's accused of raping a minor, and former Telecel board member Jenny Mutasa, accused of swindling the company of more than $1,700,000. Tomana has been refusing to prosecute the two since 2010, citing lack of evidence. Efforts to get a comment from Tomana, Kereke, and Mutasa were futile as they were not answering their phones. But Studio 7's Blessing Zulu reached out to the lawyer representing the minor, Charles Warara.
Yes, I can confirm that we have been issued with that certificate to prosecute.
In terms of the law, what does this mean now?
It means we can proceed and try and have the trial that matter in court.
In the
rape case, that is.
In the absence of the prosecutor general, walk us through what happens. Who will be prosecuting?
Well, it means the complainant or the person who has been issued with that certificate will be prosecuting. They can choose someone else to do it on their behalf. Their legal practitioner can act on their behalf. So it will be just as if they are a prosecutor in normal criminal case.
And how long will it take for this matter to be set down by the courts?
It's not certain yet because it depends on the court, you know, the system there, the court role. Whether they've got cases that are already enrolled for purpose of the trial and when they can give us a date for our matter to kick off.
May you read the contents word for word of this certificate of prosecution?
The certificate simply reads, Certificate Nolle Prosecute. Whereas Munyaradzi Kereke was accused of committing rape as defined in Section 65 and indecent assault as defined in Section 67, of the Criminal Codification and Reform Act, Chapter 09:23, respectively. And whereas a private party who can show some substantial and peculiar interest in the issue of the trial arising out of some injury which he individually suffered by the commission of the offense may prosecute in any court competent to try the offense, the person alleged to have committed it. Now, therefore, I, Florence Yambe, a delegate of the Prosecutor General of the Republic of Zimbabwe, having been authorized by him in terms of Section 6 of the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act, do as I hereby certify on his behalf and instruction that the Prosecutor General has seen the statements or affidavits on which the charge is based and declined to prosecute at the public instance.
A lawyer representing the minor allegedly raped by Kereke, Charles Warara, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Thousands of commuters in Bulawayo are stranded as commuter omnibuses pulled off the road earlier today following clashes with the police. Correspondent Taurai Shaba has more.
Bulawayo's biggest terminus for local commuters, popularly known as Kodini, which is always teeming with commuter buses and commuters themselves, was deserted from just before lunchtime as commuter operators suspended their operations in protest against alleged harassment by traffic police. A driver, who only identified himself as Temba, told Studio 7 that police had been distressing them, fining them excessively for minor offenses and also asking for bribes.
The problem is the police, they need a lot of things, which we don't have. Other things is right, but they're just charging taxes. They're saying they need retests, everything.
Temba confirmed reports that what sparked the clashes between the police and the commuter drivers was an incident in the morning in which two police officers were beaten up by a group of drivers and touts after they had boarded one commuter bus with the intention of impounding the vehicle. Studio 7 was not able to reach police for comment. The standoff left thousands of commuters stranded. A few commuter buses that were operating hiked their fares, taking advantage of the crisis, and many commuters blamed the police for what they said was their high-handedness. A woman who only identified herself as Mrs. Moyo said she was worried because her baby was crying consistently as she had been waiting for a commuter bus for well over 3 hours.
There is no transport here. We are waiting for the transport. There is no transport. But these men are just suing the combis. So no transport to go home. They are now charging dollar to go home.
Clashes between police and commuter drivers have often resulted in running battles that have at times resulted in fatal accidents. Freelance journalist Crispin Lovu was briefly detained while taking pictures of the standoff between the police and commuter bus drivers. Elsewhere, ZANU-PF Central Committee member Killian Spanda last night won the party's primary election and will represent his party as a candidate from Kolumani constituency following the death of Thamsa Ngamahlangu last month. Spanda beat former Bulawayo Mayor David Ndlovu in a closely contested poll which was fraught with allegations of irregularities. Spanda is expected to file his nomination papers when the nomination court sits tomorrow at the Bulawayo Magistrates Court. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shaba.
President Robert Mugabe today joined four other African leaders for the inauguration of the new president of Tanzania, John Pombe Magufuli. Magufuli will be deputized by Samia Suluhu Hassan from Zanzibar, who becomes the first female vice president. Other SADC presidents present at the ceremony were Edgar Lungu of Zambia, Rwanda's Paul Kagame, the DRC's Joseph Kabila, and Jacob Zuma of South Africa. For analysis of developments in Tanzania, Studio 7's Blessing Zulu turned to VOA Swahili Service Chief Mamoyo Hamza and asked him about the significance of the election.
It is very significant, most important because of the term limit that Tanzania has been practicing for many years now. And President Kikwete has been saying this again and again when he's around other political leaders from the region, insisting on term limits. The elections was also important because this year it was a real test for Tanzania's democracy because it was very much contested. The opposition had a realistic chance of winning the elections. Of course, they didn't win, and they're not pleased with the results. But the way the elections was conducted and the fact that it was very competitive, it was a big test for Tanzania's democracy.
The vice president is a woman, the first female vice president. How significant is this?
For the first time in Tanzania, the vice president is a woman. So that means the next stage would be the president of Tanzania could be a woman. The current vice president, who is from the islands of Zanzibar, has been in politics for many years, and the moment she was nominated as a running mate, she drew a lot of women votes in this election. So you could also say that that's a very very significant moment in Tanzania's history and democracy too.
What do you make of the SADC presidents that were present at the ceremony? That is Edgar Lungu, Zambia, Paul Kagame, Rwanda, DRC's Joseph Kabila, Jacob Zuma of South Africa, and of course, President Robert Mugabe.
Yeah, that's very historical. It speaks of the history that Tanzania has had with its neighbors, and as you know, Tanzania was very much involved in the liberation movement of many southern African countries. Tanzania is a leading member of the East African Federation movement. So it shows the ties that exist between among these countries. And also the value that they place on Tanzania as a, you know, one of the leading nations in terms of resolving issues around the region.
VOA Swahili Service Chief Mwamoyo Hamza speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Washington, D.C. Blessing also reached the political analyst and former Zimbabwe diplomat in Ethiopia, Clifford Mashiri, who says Harare is a lot to learn from Dar es Salaam.
It is a very significant event or occasion in the sense that it's showing us the renewal of governments in Southern Africa. In comparison with Zimbabwe, we've seen Tanzanians have changed governments and their leaders. Since independence, they have changed them. Since the death of Mwalimu, we had the various other leaders, including the most recent one. So it's surprising that Zimbabwe is not drawing lessons from those who sponsored the liberation struggle, which sponsored the independence of Zimbabwe.
Because the government is cash-strapped at the moment, Zimbabweans usually complain when Mr. Mugabe travels. Do you think this inauguration is justified?
Well, the inauguration is an important occasion, but it doesn't justify Mr. Mugabe attending in person. The country is struggling, its fiscus is not in order. And at the same time, Mr. Mugabe has shown that he is not in the best of health of late. It's surprising that he would not let a deputy or a vice president or just the ambassador in Tanzania there to represent him like other governments do.
Political analyst and former Zimbabwe diplomat in Ethiopia, Clifford Mashiri, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from London.
The United States Embassy in Harare is urging all interested youths in the country to wrap up their application as the deadline for the 2016 round of the Mandela Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders draws close. United States Embassy Deputy Public Affairs Officer Nicole Finman confirmed in an interview with Studio 7 that Zimbabwe's fellowship slots have been increased from 50 to 60 following U.S. President Barack Obama's announcement the fellowship will select 1,000 applicants for next year. All applications are due next Wednesday and must be submitted online, says Finman.
We are looking for people who are young Zimbabweans who are already demonstrating their leadership skills and their leadership potential, who are between the ages of 25 and 35 years old. There are exceptions on the young end. We have sent Zimbabweans as young as 21 both years so far of the fellowship. There are unfortunately no exceptions on the high end. So 35 is definitely a cutoff.
Now, of course, there is an online application that one must complete. Can you let us know where you can grab this application?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find the application at yalistate.gov. However, if it's easier for you, just check out the U.S. Embassy's Facebook page. We've been posting quite a lot about it. So if you go to our homepage and scroll, you'll see a number of posts, and all of them include tips on how to apply, but also links to the application itself. So U.S. Embassy Harare on Facebook is probably your best resource.
The application itself closes next week on November the 11th, but can you give us a quick, brief breakdown of the application timeline?
First thing I will say is that there is a plague on the continent of doing things at the last minute. So anybody who's thinking about applying really needs to start today. We are concerned. It is going to take time, but for all of those that successfully complete and submit their application by November 11th. They'll hear from us in December or January if they have been invited to be interviewed.
That was United States Embassy Deputy Public Affairs Officer Nicole Finman on the line with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo from Harare. Tune in on Sunday and listen to a lengthy interview in which Tatenda Gumbo speaks with Finman, giving tips to prospective applicants.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up
in our political panel section tonight, we are focusing on the $10 million youth loan facility launched by the government yesterday.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A British Prime Minister David Cameron says he believes it's more likely than not that a bomb brought down a Russian passenger jet over Egypt's Sinai Peninsula last week, killing all 224 people on board. Speaking before talks with Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, who is in London today, Cameron also noted that experts are not yet certain of the cause of the crash.
And Chinese President Xi Jinping is visiting Vietnam today as the two countries attempt to strengthen ties again after a strain last year over China's territory disputes in the South China Sea. Xi was given a ceremonious welcome at the start of his two-day visit, although demonstrators gathered in parts of the capital, Ho Chi Minh City, to protest his presence. Witnesses say the demonstrations were quickly disbanded and the protesters driven away in vans.
Youth and Empowerment Minister Patrick Juao yesterday launched a $10 million youth fund in Harare to assist the youth to start income-generating projects. But such programs have caused divisions between the ruling ZANU-PF and opposition parties, with critics saying most of the previous beneficiaries have not paid back the loans. The opposition also claimed that the loans were being parceled out to ZANU-PF youths only. For perspective, Studio 7's Ntungameli Nkomo spoke with ZANU-PF lawmaker for Pelandaba Mpopoma and Director Samuel Wadzai of the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe, who urges loan recipients to use the money for the intended projects and not waste the resources on expensive cars and gadgets.
It is very, very important for the young ones to know that these money are money that are supposed to help them and also help others. So it is important that they must know that the ability to repay is actually the capacitating ability for the next person who is behind you who will receive that money. So let the people know the basic economics of money. Money, you only charge profit, not capital. So they must know that when they receive this money, they're not meant for them to then go on and splash out and buy the expensive makes of vehicles, the Range Rovers, Mercedes-Benz, you know them. It's meant for you to actually improve into your business. And then you can realize the growth of your business and realize profit. Then from a profit, that you can do that. That doesn't mean you find them now painting the towns red and white, being seen in all the bars, buying chicks, the women, all the expensive alcohol, and things. That is wrong. The money is meant for you to inject into your business so that tomorrow you become a better person. Then you grow from a small business to probably the large businesses that we're talking about that have closed down. So they must have that financial discipline.
Mr. Wadzai, what should be done to make sure that only deserving youth benefit from this fund, unlike in the past, where the same program has largely been run on political patronage?
It's a reality. The past programs
really were designed along our political lines, and people could only benefit if they are associated with certain political parties, and to be precise, associated with the ruling party. And that's unfortunate for us as a country. I think people should be granted visa facilities on merit, looking at one's proposal and then ultimately making a decision whether it qualifies or not. And politics should not be allowed to come in, because this is about developing the country. You don't need to develop ZANU-PF to develop Zimbabwe. Neither do you need to develop only MDC to develop Zimbabwe. So it should be a national project. That's what we are looking for in this new project. So we call upon the minister to ensure that we don't see the old story repeating itself. People should be granted these loans on merit.
Honorable Chuma, we know that during the Kasukuwere era, there are ZANU-PF politicians who were not youth, but who also benefited from the same fund. How can that be avoided this time around?
Unfortunately, I cannot comment on that because I'm not privy to that. I'm not aware that the others who are not meant to benefit that benefited. What I know is that the uptake was not very good, because some people who labeled it the ZANU-PF thing and then they stayed away from it. But they're the same people who now come out and complain to say we never received funds. But I know for a fact that CABS, for example, here in the Caribbean, they said that there is some money that they're not taking and they ended up returning it back to Harare. So that's a sign of people not taking up a facility that is there, whether for fear of credit, because some would tell, especially our mentality this side, people are really afraid to take credit because they'll be thinking, and then my house will be attacked. Then I'm going to be in trouble. I'm going to be arrested and this and that. Yet, this thing is meant for you if you have a proper, sound proposal to take it up, because there's no business that can start with your own money.
Mr. Wazai, your last word briefly.
Our fear is that if not properly managed, this initiative will come to naught. I've already raised the issue of politicization. We just pray that we are not going to see any politics coming into play here.
That was Director Samuel Wadzai of the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe. You also heard from ZANU-PF lawmaker Joseph Chuma. Both were speaking to Studio 7's Ntungameli Nkomo.
Opposition Movement for Democratic Change leader Morgan Tsvangirai today landed in President Mugabe's home province, Mashonaland West, to engage his supporters. Tsvangirai is expected to address several rallies in the province until Sunday. Last month, the MDC leader engaged Zimbabweans in Mashonaland Central Province. He addressed his first rally at Maumbe Business Center in Urungwe Central, where he spoke about the worsening economic and food crisis in the country, promising that his MDC will address these problems if elected into power in 2018, according to Blessing Mandaba, the MDC TS Mashonaland West provincial spokesman.
He had a very successful rally attended by more than 1,000 people. It was very successful, and he touched on various issues, including good governance and the people's livelihoods, how it is supposed to be, and how the MDC government is going to tackle it.
We also understand there was a lot of intimidation going on before this meeting. How is the situation like now?
Yes, there was a lot of intimidation prior to the meeting. The chief even held a meeting with his traditional leaders to actually stop people from attending the rallies. Even the MP, the ZANU-PF MP, Mr. Dira Mauro, even did out a cease in an effort to make sure that people won't even attend it. And even the ZANU-PF youth were also intimidating people from attending, but people attended regardless of these intimidations. People are no longer afraid of ZANU-PF now. Whatever happens, people are ready for the eventualities, if I may say.
Where are the next rallies by Mr. Tsvangirai?
Well, the Freedom Train is heading for Alaska tomorrow. From Alaska Tennis Court, we are heading for Dongwe Business Center. That is in Chebutu East. From there, we are heading to Zimba East, Kasa Ground. The president will visit the people whose houses were raised to the ground by Asomis, I think about 2 weeks ago. It's step forward there.
That was Blessing Mandaba, the MDCT's National and West Provincial Spokesman, on the line with Blessing Zulu from Maumbe Business Center in Hurungwe. Last week, we featured all political parties operating in Zimbabwe, big and small, and now we are running a poll on our website on which political party you trust to serve you as Zimbabweans. Please visit your website www.voezimbabwe.com and share your thoughts on Zimbabwe's political parties. We will tell you the results next week.
And in sports news, at least three contestants for the post of Zifa president beat today's deadline to submit their papers for the powerful post of the country's soccer governing body. According to some Zifa officials, Philip Chiangwa, Trevor Carlisle and Leslie Gwindi submitted their papers and paid the required $2,500 to the Zifa Electoral Committee headed by former president of the Labour Court, Selo Nare. Front runner Chiangwa's nearest rival, Alexander Maseko, failed to submit his papers after paying a fee of $50 to get the nomination papers. Chiangwa's running mate, Omegas Banda, who was in the previous Zifa executive as its vice president, tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube they hope to win the two posts on December 5th.
I did submit my papers today, Mr. Dube, for the vice president's position.
Do you think that you're going to land the position of vice president of Zifa?
I put everything in the hands of the voters, who are the councillors. I cannot just confirm, but obviously, if one gets into a race, he expects to win. That is the truth. My running mate is none other than Dr. Phil Chiangwa. That's the team to lead Zifa.
So what do you have for football, you know, this time around?
I'm always there for transparency, accountability. That's what we need. And without finance, we cannot progress in Zimbabwean football or in any organization. We talk finance, we talk money, then football will go ahead.
That was Omegas Banda, who's running for the post of Zifa Vice President, speaking with Studio 7 from Bulawayo. Former Highlanders Vice Chairman, who's also running for the same post, other names are yet to be confirmed by Zifa officials, who declined to release all names of contesting candidates.
Meanwhile, Maseko told Studio 7 why he pulled out of the Zifa presidential election.
I tried to submit the papers that the Central Mission, which we couldn't even meet in time to submit. So I'm certain that we didn't submit due to the fact that there are police clearances, and we also wanted my certificate at come from South Africa. In any case, all is not lost because I'm still going to come back in 2 years' time.
So now, what are you going to do next?
I'm going to go back and to my home to make sure that, you know, to plan this thing properly and to make sure that I put people on the ground, people are going to be most of the stuff.
That was former Warriors kingpin Alexander Maseko speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. It's not yet known whether former Warriors player Benjani Mwaruaru filed his nomination papers for the post of Zifa president. He was not available for comment.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host on the Women's Roundtable will lead discussions about domestic violence.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Prosecutor General Johannes Tomana complies with a constitutional court ruling and issues private prosecution certificates for a ZANU-PF parliamentarian accused of raping a minor and businesswoman Jane Mutasa for allegedly swindling Telecel.
President Mugabe today joined four other African leaders for the inauguration of Tanzania's new president John Pombe Magufuli.
And opposition MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai takes his Meet the People tour to President Mugabe's home province of Mashonaland West.
That's our broadcast this evening. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And now stand by for Studio 7 in Ntebele. This is Jonga Kandemire.